The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Inside the Huddle. It's our wrap-up show for the IU's win over Florida International last Saturday. We're going to go over and put a bow on this game. Indiana is now 2-0 on the season. It wasn't the prettiest two wins, but it's two wins nonetheless, and it was a very exciting 36-22 win on Saturday night at Memorial Stadium. We're welcoming any co-host, TJ Inman. TJ, how are you tonight?
I'm doing very well, Sammy. Yeah, it's very good to be covering a 2-0 football team. It's a lot better than covering an 0-2 team. I know that the two wins have not been incredibly impressive, but I thought there was a lot of growth between week one and week two. And that's something you're looking for is a positive trending team. We don't know if that's going to continue on week three, but I feel a lot better about things tonight than I did last Monday.
Definitely. And, you know, being 2-0 Florida International, despite what some people have been saying in their articles, they are a quality team. They knocked off UCF in their opener. We'll see. We'll keep an eye on out on what they do the rest of the year. But they're no slouch. Maybe if you've never heard of them, that's on you. You don't really follow college football. But Florida International was a quality opponent. Indiana's defense is up to the task. They forced three turnovers, highlighted by that pick six by Jameel Cook Jr. It was a real exciting game. It was nice to see the defense, back up some talk and take a little pride in what they do. They pressured the ball really well. They should welcome back Tigre Scales next week. But, TJ, what did you see was the difference in the defense this week as opposed to week one?
Well, I think the first thing that jumped out right away was the interior linemen, having Darius Latham, Ralph Green back. They paired with Darius Rainer and Nate Hoff to form a pretty good foursome along the middle of that defensive line. I thought that they did a much better job of getting penetration and disruption into the opposition backfield. They only got two sacks and two tackles for loss, but they were pressuring the quarterback quite a bit and did a much better job against run plays. While they weren't the inside zone type stuff we saw against SIU, they did a much better job getting in the backfield against Alex Magoo and against Gardner and breaking things up before they really got to the second level of defense. And I thought that those guys, Ralph Green and Darius Latham, were both active, maybe Latham a couple of times to the point of being a little bit too eager to go. He had a couple of offsides penalties that hurt, but for the most part, I think that having those two guys back really made a difference. And I think that the just general aggression level of the defense was much improved, and that's something that was talked about throughout the week by Kevin Wilson and by the players and the defensive staff. They all talked about maybe simplifying things a little bit on defense and just getting more aggressive about the way that they went about things. And I think you saw that with guys getting into the backfield, not worried so much about maybe giving up a big play and staying back. I think there are still some definite concerns about tackling issues, some definite concerns about coverage in the secondary as we head to a game against an explosive passing attack. But those are a couple of the things that really stood out to me. Just the big plays that they got. You mentioned the play from Jameel Cook, but there are also a couple of forced fumbles that Nick Mangieri and Marcus Oliver were big parts of. Marcus Oliver continues to have a really, really good season. He's had two fantastic games. It's going to be really interesting to see how he meshes with Tigre Scales. They could be a really good combo. But the big plays is something we're not used to seeing. I know that I was kind of in disbelief when the Indiana defense, you mentioned it as the turning point. There's no doubt about it. The Indiana defense coming up huge with that, that forced turnover that came after Dawson Fletcher, the redshirt junior linebacker, was able to tip away a pass. That was a big play. Two plays later, Jameel Cook comes up with it after Marcus Oliver pressures Magoo. And then he turns it into points to put the game away for IU. So the big plays are something that this defense is going to have to do more of, because they are going to give up yards. I mean, that's going to happen. Most defenses in college football do. It's just a matter of making big plays. And instead of giving up touchdowns, maybe turning those into field goals by getting a sack, or, you know, preventing touchdowns by getting turnovers once a team gets into the red zone. So good growth from the defense, I thought. They do need to improve upon a lot of things. Overall, you have to be pleased with the way it went from week one to week two.
Yeah, that play by Dawson Fletcher, it looked like, I think the tight end was open, and then Fletcher just stuck his hand out of nowhere and just grazed the ball to knock it away. And you're right, that set up the pick six. We're also going to welcome in Nick Holmes. He's our other writer for Hoosier Huddle, in on the line from Bedford. Nick, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm good. I'm glad I can be on tonight.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have the trio back. So it's nice. Even though we, some people are saying this is the worst 2-0 football team in college football. They're still 2-0. They're trending in the right direction. The atmosphere around, in the press conferences and around the players was so much better than week one, where they were disappointed in their performance. But TJ, to go back to the turnovers and the defense flying around, they scored 20 points off of opponents' turnovers, which means they scored two touchdowns and a field goal, but they missed the extra point. Or actually, they scored three touchdowns then off of turnovers, and they missed the extra point. I'm sorry, my math is all off. There's a reason I'm not a math teacher. But anyway, they scored three touchdowns. They took advantage of it, and that's something IU needs to do, especially going forward into next week against a powerful offense. Nick, what did you see that was different from the offense and the defense from week one in week two?
Defensively, the biggest thing that stuck out to me when I looked at the stat card after the game, 11 deflections. You pointed this out today, TJ, in your piece. The big guys up front, Latham and Green, both had a couple deflections. Rashard Fant passed pass interferences, but he had four deflections as well. And I also like to see – I also like that Sudfeld was able to – distribute the ball pretty evenly among eight guys. And I also really like the multiple offensive schemes that we saw. We saw some two tight end set like we saw last week, but then we also saw them split out. So you had a four wide receiver set part of the game. So I really just like the variety that we saw on offense and the way that Sudfeld was, it wasn't his most accurate game. No, it wasn't his best game. But he was able to get the ball to guys, and they made plays once they caught it.
Yeah, exactly. Sudfeld didn't have his most accurate game, but he got the job done. And that's a game, usually when the quarterback doesn't play well, Indiana usually loses. But they leaned on the running game a little bit. Jordan Howard had another terrific game. Devine Redding had a nice game as well. And it was a game where IU moved the ball between the 20s, but got bogged down a little bit in the red zone, and that's another area they're going to have to fix going into next week. Another area of concern that concerned me on the game was kicking. Oaks was great on kickoffs. He knocked five out of the end zone, and the coverage when they did take it out was fantastic. But he did miss a field goal. It was a 44-yard field goal. The wind was probably a little tricky down there. When I was down for pregame, it was swirling around a little bit, and he missed an extra point. So that's something to keep an eye on. He was a little inconsistent as a freshman last year, but still very good, still has a big leg. And with Aaron Del Grasso getting back from injury, there might be a little competition there. Wilson hinted at kicker. Other than that, it's a nice win for IU to go 2-0. It's the first time since 2012 that they're 2-0. They're looking to go 3-0 now for the first time since 2010. So these, you know, it's progress, and people might not see progress in terms of who they beat or the score at the end of the game. But 2-0 is progress, and progress is progress. Did anything else, TJ, stand out for you before we move on to the next thing?
Yeah, I thought that the play calling in some areas was very good. Nick mentioned the multiple sets. I thought that they got creative with the way that they used the tight ends. I enjoyed seeing that. We saw Michael Cooper get open down the seam a couple of times. That's good. Utilizing the tight ends that they have, I think, is really important. We talked about it in the preseason. It was good to see it. But I was a little bit confused, and I'll get your guys' opinion on this. The third down play calling in kind of a third to medium to third to long area, like a third and six to a third and nine, third and ten area, they multiple times handed the ball off on inside draws or zone read plays. I'm not entirely sure what the thought process behind that was. I know that Sudfeld was not 100% on point with his passing, but you know, it's senior quarterback that I know they have a lot of trust in. It almost seemed at times that they were approaching it as if they had the passing game from last year and just didn't trust them to take care of the ball on third and six, and instead just decided to run the ball. I love the running game, and I love leaning on it, but I thought that that was a bit too conservative on, I don't know, four or five occasions on third and long. What did you guys think about that? What do you think that that's something we're going to continue to see in close games?
Well, TJ, I watched – go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, at the press conference the other night, Coach Wilson mentioned that he had spent a lot more time with the defense this past week, and it almost seemed like maybe he wasn't entirely as involved in the play calling during the game this week as he had been maybe in weeks and seasons past. I know that he's always had somewhat input. He's never given up play calling, I think, 100%. He's always had a little bit of input. And I think maybe there was just, you know, maybe it's they were being a little bit more conservative, like you're saying, just trying to get the points. I don't know. I was wondering that myself at times, too. So, yeah, it's really hard to say.
Well, from I watched the first half from Saturday over again on TV, and Chuck Long's was the analyst on there. And he's saying Florida International was disguising their blitzes very well, so maybe that confused Sudfeld a little bit in terms of play call and running into that blitz in the teeth of the defense. There was one fourth and five or fourth and three there where IU had them drawn offside. There was no contact, though. And then the referee curses at Wilson, which he apologized to. Later, I don't know if people on TV saw it. I didn't hear anything when I watched it over again, but you certainly heard it in the stadium and in the press box. The officiating crew apologized to IU officials today, and it was the F-bomb came from the referee and not from Wilson, so he wanted to clear that up. But you know, the play calling, it was conservative. I don't know if it was something they saw in the defense, maybe something they could exploit or they were hiding their blitzes that well. But it's something that maybe they don't want to tip their hand to Western Kentucky. It's games where like third and eight, third and seven are going to be big plays next week, especially against that kind of offense. So that's my thinking on there. Other than that, it was a very solid performance from IU. Howard, Redding, Sudfeld played well. It was nice to see the ball distribution. Michael Cooper, the tight end, I know we haven't talked about the tight ends a lot during the season, but he had three catches, I think, for 66 yards, and he made some big plays to get big chunk yards. Mitchell Page had an awesome spin move to get into the end zone for his first touchdown. So going forward, Nick, we'll go with you first. Going forward, what does IU need to improve upon going into next week?
I've been kind of alluding to it all summer, and, you know, it looked a lot better in the second half this last weekend, but getting pressure on the quarterback, getting in his face, making him uncomfortable. Like you guys mentioned, Oliver got to Magoo, forced him into a bad throw, turns into 6 points for IU. So we need a lot more of that. Brandon Dowdy is not very mobile. He's a pretty stationary guy. They're now without their top running back. So there's a pretty good chance they're going to throw it at least 45 to 50 times this game. So you know what's coming. You just got to pin your ears back and get some pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brandon Dowdy, when TJ and I watched him against Vanderbilt, he was kind of spatchy back there and had trouble when they got pressure. TJ, in your view, what are some of the other things that IU needs to do to come out victorious next week?
Before I get to that, I do want to mention one positive we haven't talked about yet that I just don't want to take for granted, the continued good play of the offensive line. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about the running game success, and Sudfeld's pocket was kept clean as well. The offensive line, we knew it was going to be good. It has been. But, you know, still want to mention that as something that continue, and we'll talk more about that in the Western Kentucky preview as an area that IU should work to really exploit. But things to improve, I think the tackling in the secondary is going to be the big one for me. I know that these are young guys, and I actually do think that there was a lot of growth between week one and week two. It's amazing how many freshmen and redshirt freshmen you see on the field in that secondary that they're able to even just understand the game plan and all that, as young as they all are, without a veteran presence on the field. But I thought that they did grow some, but you did see a couple of blown coverages. You saw some very poor tackling against Thomas Owens, two different guys that led to the 75-yard touchdown. You saw a really just telegraphed cornerback blitz by Ben Bach that I'm not blaming Bach, because that was the play call, I imagine. You saw it the whole way, and that was Thomas Owens' first touchdown. That Alex Magoo just threw it to him. He was open, and a missed tackle led to the touchdown. So I think the tackling in the secondary really needs to get better, because against Western Kentucky, one of the things that they are going to do is hit receivers, try to get them in space. And if they're in space, the secondary guys are going to have to make one-on-one tackles. And if they totally whiff or just try to make arm tackles and big receivers or even medium-sized receivers just bounce off of that and keep going, that's going to lead to big plays. When you're out there on an island as a secondary player, you've got to be able to at least hold guys up so that other players can come aid you in that tackle. IU does not have the biggest secondary players, and like we've said, they're young. They're not as physically mature as some of the wide receivers they're going against. But, you know, use the sideline as an extra defender to force them out of bounds, or just get in their way to hold them up so that an additional player can come help you out. I mean, they cannot continue to give up big receiving plays because they're unable to bring down the receiver. Overall, I thought the coverage against FIU was pretty good. Like you said, multiple pass breakups by a lot of different guys, including Rashard Fant, that was really good with four different pass breakups. So I thought the coverage was good, but the tackling after the guys were able to haul in good on-target passes, that was not so good. So that's my biggest area to work on, and then just continuing to get more and more pressure on the quarterback. Yeah, two sacks is fine, but I think you are targeting a few more than that against Western Kentucky, who does not have the strongest offensive line that IU is going to face. FIU has a pretty strong one, and Indiana was able to get pressure. I'd like to see more of that against Western Kentucky.
Yeah, and the reason they didn't get more sacks is because Magoo was very good on his feet and very quick, where when IU sent pressure and collapsed the pocket, he was able to run forward and gain some positive yards. About the tackling, Brandon Dowdy is going to complete some passes. He's a great quarterback. They have some really good receivers. He's going to complete some passes. Don't let them get those yards after contact. So that's huge, TJ. I agree with you on that. We're going to start wrapping this up real quick. 2-0, it's where IU wanted to be going into this game. It's a game we've had circled. basically since the schedule came out that this is a game mm-hmm. that IU needs to have to go to a bowl game. Heading into Western Kentucky, they're a tough, tough team. They're receiving votes this week in both polls. So, you know, IU's right where people want – or right where they want it to be. And if that's not good enough for some people, so be it. If it is, you know, that's what it is. Another point I want to touch upon before wrapping the show up is fan support. The fans who stayed, they were loud last week. The fans who, at the beginning of the game, I know I mentioned it to Nick, that this was a loud crowd. The student section was probably half full, and they were loud to start off with. And then at halftime, everybody disappeared. Whether it was too chilly for them or too late is anybody's guess. But I think it's time for IU to get rid of the pass-outs and get people to stay for the second half, because those who left did miss a heck of a second half.
Yeah, the third quarter was another really good performance, and I think that is something Nick mentioned in his article, that that's the second straight time this season that the Hoosiers have shut out a team in the third quarter. So whether that's just pure coincidence or if the coaching staff is making some good adjustments in that third quarter or in halftime, that is allowing some strong defensive third quarters, and it was a good second half. Overall, defensively, I know they gave up quite a few yards in the last, 6 or 7 minutes. I think it was 150 or 175 yards of total offense given up in the final 7 minutes. But some of that was just desperation attempts by FIU and, some penalties that I didn't necessarily agree with the calls, but that aided their drives. But, yeah, I think that the support – on TV, like you said, it was a pretty loud crowd. It's hard to tell because you never know the volumes and where they have the microphones set up, and it's really hard to tell how loud a crowd is based on TV, because you could go Spinal Tap and turn it up to 11, and it could sound really loud when it's hardly anybody in the stands. But just from a visual standpoint, it's noticeable on TV that it is a lighter crowd in the second half than it is in the first half. Whether that's the pass outs, whether that's people getting bored, whether that is the weather, I don't know. It's probably a combination of all of the above, and I think that anything IU could do to provide somewhat of a better atmosphere for their football team, which could help them win, which could then help the atmosphere improve for the next week. And, it goes on and on, kind of a self-compounding issue that I think anything the administration could do is something they should pursue.
Yeah, and maybe they don't have control over this, but I think halftime is 20 minutes. That's a long halftime. I know it's probably the TV guys who are sitting there in their gold thrones, who are counting their money, who make it 20 minutes. But the 20-minute halftime is a long time to sit there, especially in the cold weather. The band actually had a decent show and had fireworks. So,
of course.
It's just disappointing when you watch it on TV and don't see fans in the stands, and you see the TV crews scrambling for different shots to try and keep the empty stands out.
Yeah.
Nick, final thoughts on this week, and we'll get into next week on Wednesday. Nick, are you still there? TJ, I think we lost Nick.
No, I'm back. Sorry about that.
All right. Nick, what are your final thoughts going into next week?
Well, like you mentioned early on, some people aren't, impressed with some of the competition that we've played at this point, but we are 2-0. They've won both of the games, and these were two of the games that we had circled. If we're going to go bowling, we had to win these two games. They indeed did that. Were they impressive performances? Not really, especially week one. But, this week three against Western Kentucky, like you mentioned, the fans need to come out. It's a 4:00 game. It's going to be an exciting game. especially if you like points. I'd imagine there might be a few points on the scoreboard. Hopefully not. I would like IU to hold them to about 2 touchdowns, but we'll see. So, I mean, you know, it's been a long time since IU football has had something to be excited about. So let's just go out and support them and see where this team takes us.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's 2-0. It's been a couple years since they've been 2-0 and have looked, you know, like they actually could go to a bowl game. TJ, your final thoughts on FIU, and you know, we'll talk about Western Kentucky on mm-hmm. on Wednesday. But your final thoughts on FIU?
Well, I know that there are aspects of the Florida International game that I was not particularly happy with. We've talked about those. I think the biggest one's probably the red zone conversions. I think that Indiana could have put that game away much earlier than they ended up doing. But good, I think that the defense was able to make some plays themselves. They did not need the offense to have an awesome game for IU to win. And I think that that can be a confidence builder for this defense. It's such a young group that could be a really good thing for their growth. As far as FIU is concerned, I understand that they are not a great team. They might not even be a good team. But I think that at very worst, that is going to be a team that wins 6 or 7 games. I think that they have 2 NFL players on their offense. Jonnu Smith is going to be in the NFL. And Thomas Owens looks the part of an NFL receiver, and he's played like it these first 2 weeks of the season. I'm not an NFL scout, but he looked like he had everything you need to be in the NFL to me in a couple years. So while not a total complete team, FIU has had a fast defense, an athletic defense, an aggressive defense that IU was able to move the ball on. Their run defense was supposed to be really good. I think it is. But I think Indiana can run the ball on almost, not everybody, but almost everyone they play, and I think they showed that against FIU. Overall, I think it was a win you need to be happy about. I'm not going to tell people they have to feel this way, but I think for the most part there's a reason to be optimistic about Indiana moving forward, and I don't just mean because they beat FIU and because they beat Southern Illinois. I mean because of the improvement they made between week 1 and 2, and because of the improvement I think they still could make with all the young players that are getting a lot of playing time. I think there's a lot of growth that can still occur with this football team. And I've watched a lot of the other Big Ten teams that IU is going to play this year. There's some vulnerability right now out there. Maryland is a mess right now. Rutgers is a complete tire fire at the moment. They have a lot of talent.
That's
don't get
nice,
me wrong. They do.
TJ, that's being nice to Rutgers, since New Jersey is a tire fire. They might be a toxic wasteland wrapped in a dumpster fire with tires.
Yeah, and I mean, who knows what that program is going to look like by the time they come. I mean, they could turn it around and rally around each other through all this criticism, and that could all happen. It could. There is reason to be optimistic about some of the teams remaining on Indiana's schedule of IU having a chance to get to that 6 wins. That's what it's about. It's not about being the best 2-0 team or the worst 2-0 team or whatever. It's about being 2-0. It's about being 2-0, improving from week to week, and giving yourself a chance to get to a bowl game. And as of now, Indiana has done that. So hopefully they can do it week 3. We'll have coverage about it, about that game all week. And we will have the preview podcast up later in the week. So we will be more than ready for that game come Saturday.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for jumping on the Monday evening. I know it's not our usual time, but we appreciate it. A few notes before we get out of here. Tigray Scales will be back on Saturday. A few injury notes from the press conference today. Dom Booth is out with an undisclosed injury. Wilson just said he's unable to go, but it doesn't require surgery. Chase Dutra, Wilson said, was close, but was really vague on it. We have the full injury update on HoosierHuddle.com. So keep coming back. We have great content. Nick and TJ do a great job. We also have a great photo gallery for last week's game from Cam Koning. And we'll see you on Wednesday. Thanks, and have a pleasant evening.
All right. Thanks, Sammy. Have a good week, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting, but Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give, but what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey, and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.